Welcome to our final episode of Season 2 of Talking to Grandma. I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. We have spent almost two seasons talking with parents and educators of children with bilingualism in their bones. But in this episode, we get to hear a very special conversation between a father and his daughter, who are both on the journey to preserve their heritage language. Dr. Armando X. Orduña and his daughter, Juliana Sol Orduña, sat down to share what that journey looks like from their own perspective. Latinos for Education Texas, an educational equity nonprofit charged with the mission of connecting, developing, and placing Latino leadership in educational spaces. His background is anchored in the intersectionality of educational access for immigrant origin youth and families, and the role innovative learning practices play in language development. He served as Director of Outreach Programs for Children's Museum Houston. He also taught as a secondary science teacher in urban Title I public schools. He is board president of Connect Community, Purpose-Built Communities, a Houston nonprofit focused on serving the unique needs of immigrant and refugee families. Board president of the Emmy Science Foundation, a Texas nonprofit providing material support to the spinal cord injury survivors. And board secretary of Houston PFLAG, a nonprofit offering education and advocacy support for the LGBTQ community. In 2012, Dr. Orduña received the Commitment to Excellence Award, President's Advisory Commission on Educational Excellence for Hispanics. Juliana Sol Orduña is in the sixth grade at Stafford STEM Magnet Academy, just outside of Houston, Texas. She enjoys learning about different people, their cultures, languages, and mythology. She speaks English, Spanish, and studies Mandarin Chinese at school. She studies several other languages during her spare time. She enjoys learning about the cultures of different indigenous groups. Now on to our episode. We hope it inspires the whole family. Enjoy. Welcome to the show, Armando. We're so happy to have you here.
Thank you, Veronica. I'm very, very excited to be here.
You shared a beautiful, vulnerable, deep conversation with your daughter about language, bilingualism, and identity. Why did you choose to do this?
So I have listened to all of your episodes. I'm a big, big fan of the podcast. I love the theme. I love the topics that you dive into. And for the listeners, you and I met recently in Austin, Texas, during South by Southwest EDU conference. And we had talked and we connected, and there was this opportunity for me to come on to the show and add my experience. But as I was listening to the episodes to kind of get a feel for what the show was about and the context, every single episode, I kept thinking, that's what I wanted to talk about, or that's something that the topic that I get really excited about. So by the time that I got through, I don't know, over a dozen of the episodes, I realized I have nothing of value to add to the conversation, nothing. But I knew someone who did, and it was a voice that I hadn't heard yet on any of the previously published episodes, which is the voice of the child. The child who is undergoing this very intentional way of growing up under parents who are looking to cultivate bilingual, multilingual learners, children. And so I invited my daughter, my 11-year-old daughter, to sit down and have a conversation with me, and recorded that conversation and sent it over because I thought her voice, her point of view, is not only incredibly valuable, not just her, but for all bilingual children who are growing up in households like this, but also because she's close enough to those early years that she can remember things that happened to her when she was 4 and 5, and also old enough, or young enough rather, to still feel a little bit unsure about what do the next few years look like, adolescence, really. So yeah, that was the intent.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that and for coming up with this idea of
centering the voice of the bilingual child. We talk so much about what it is to raise and teach bilingual children, and we've been bilingual children ourselves, or we've gone through all of this, and we are going through the process of bilingual parenting and teaching. But the conversation that you had really provided the space for reflection and for taking in the experiences of what it means to be bilingual in America today, and the unique challenges and the unique beauty around it. And every experience is different, but this was really, really such a beautiful conversation. What do you hope that people take away from this conversation between you and your daughter?
I hope they take away whatever it is that speaks to them, whatever part of the conversation really speaks to them. You know, she shares, I think, in the conversation, it's been a while since I've listened back to it, but she shares some points of uncomfortable growth, maybe even painful growth, and that should be recognized. And it shouldn't be, well, I'm not going to say shouldn't, because those are her experiences, right? So I think in the day-to-day, as a parent, a teacher, a mentor, all the things I want to be to my children, there are times when I see them having moments of difficult growth, painful growth. And I know that if they can push through that moment, there's a big reward on the other side. And so I'm guilty of in the moment parenting, I'm guilty of pushing my children through those painful moments, as opposed to allowing them to go through those moments, experience those moments, recognize the discomfort, recognize the hardship, and then allow them to find their own way on the other side. And whether that takes them, you know, in some cases, minutes, hours, days, months, or more, I have to be the guy holding the light at the other side, beckoning them over, as opposed to the one pushing them really aggressively from behind, where then they start to push back. So yeah, I guess I said what I hope people get. They get whatever they want to get. But if that's one thing, if I could go back now to when I was a new dad, I would say, hey, be on the other side with the light beckoning them over, as opposed to the aggressive pushing from behind. Because when you feel pushed, your natural instinct as a kid is to push back.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. And something that we share a lot on the podcast is with parenting in general, and especially with bilingual parenting, you can create the environment, you can try to create the conditions, but you can't control the outcome. And that really speaks to what you're talking about of like pushing versus being the light on the other side, and really understanding that children have agency and that they're going through a lot, and that they have the right to make decisions in terms of how they handle the difficulties, the challenges of this journey. So thank you so much for sharing that. Armando, as you mentioned, we met at South by Southwest EDU in Austin not too long ago. And I was so excited about the work that you're doing at Latinos for Education, and also learned about this connection in terms of our passion for bilingualism and bilingual parenting and bilingual education. So I'd love to hear how your work in your home as a parent intersects with your work as a professional in communities.
Sure. I'm the executive director of Latinos for Education, the Texas office. We're a national organization. I work over the Texas office. And I am I feel like I'm one of those very lucky ones. Those lucky kids who grew up learning a lot about myself in the things I engaged with, and learned very quickly on that there was an appetite in the world for those things that I learned, those things that I became, those things that I'm still becoming. So meaning this, as a very young person going through undergrad, I was drawn to learning Spanish in a more formalized way. So I was a product of a bilingual household, but it was unintentional teaching. My parents, my tios, my cousins, everybody you know, spoke varying degrees of English or Spanish, depending on, you know, where they were coming from. But it was never really intentionally taught to us as children. So I was the unintentional product. And I learned to very early on to leverage my bilingualism in ways that would get me jobs early on as a young person. And then from there, I thought, you know, I've been taking formal English lessons for 12 years, you know, grade 13, kinder through 12th grade. Why don't I try to take some more formalized Spanish lessons? And did that in college. And then I was drawn to Latin American literature. And then I was drawn to Chicano literature. And then I was drawn to back to Latin American literature in its original Spanish, because now my literacy levels were a little bit higher than they were previously. And then I got involved in work where in education, where I was actively being recruited because I was fluent in two languages, or fluent enough. And I always like to tell people, you know, like, that's great that you're fluent too. I was like, you know, I feel like I'm still learning both languages every day. Mm-hmm. I'm adding more and more words to my my toolkits every single day, especially when it comes to the field of tech. There are new words I'm learning in both languages every single day. So that all led up to me working in education, either in the classroom or outside of the classroom and informal learning spaces like museum education, where I was able to bring in that other perspective. So if it was working with large groups of Spanish-speaking children, I could bring in an English perspective. If it was working with large groups of English-speaking children, I could bring in a Spanish perspective or whatever it might need for the case. And as I continued on with that work, of course, and the work, by the way, for your listeners, is primarily rooted in Texas. So as I was continuing that work in Texas, it was also layered on top of that, a lot of my social justice interests. You know, if you're in education, you are a political activist by definition. You walk into a classroom and you are there to implement change, long-lasting change for the positive. And so that work ultimately evolved into the work I'm doing now with an educational nonprofit group. We're an equity group, Latinos for Education. We seek to expand Latino leadership in educational spaces, whether that's formal spaces like in schools, classrooms, school boards, superintendent's offices, or whether that's informal spaces like all of the educational nonprofits that are out there doing great work across our cities and counties all over the country that are serving increasingly more and more Latino families and need more and more Latino board members, staffers to come in and help with setting perspectives and also help with setting and designing programming that meet the needs of these new families.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful and powerful, important work. And I'm so glad that you're doing it. Being that guiding light in education, right? Of really being able to help develop Latino leadership in these educational spaces. You're also that guiding light, as you mentioned, in terms of this bilingual parenting journey. And we're so grateful that you have opened up, that you've joined our show, that you've invited your daughter to participate in this. Before we move on to the conversation with your daughter, do you have any last words for our listeners?
I really want them to take the conversation at whatever level they want to take it. Just know that it was a little awkward in the beginning because we felt very vulnerable putting a very private conversation out there for anybody to listen to. And it was also the longest she and I have ever spoken in English to each other. So that also felt a little weird. So if it sounds awkward, it is. It was awkward.
Thank you. Yeah, I didn't get that at all. I got the vulnerability. I got the connection. A lot of really amazing stories and really, really grateful for opening that up. So now on to our conversation between Armando and Juliana about growing up bilingual in America.
For the sake of people who are listening, would you mind giving me your name, your age, and our relationship?
My full name is Juliana Sol Orduña, and my age is 11 years old, and you are my father.
And I'm Armando Orduña, and my age doesn't really matter anymore. I wanted to take some time to talk to you about language preservation and some of the reasons why your mother and I chose to do things a certain way back when you were born and back when your sister was born, and why we continue to do those things that way, and get your perspective on it. Because I've never actually talked to you about why we do the things that we do. And I don't know if you ever stopped to wonder why we do what we do, but I figured this would be a good chance for us to talk about it. How old were you when you learned that some people spoke different languages and other people spoke only one language?
I was 5 years old because I moved to a different school in kindergarten, and that school was much more diverse. And I was being exposed to a lot more English than Spanish. In my other school, I had a lot of Spanish speaking friends. So I didn't really understand that most people in Texas spoke English. Well, other people spoke English. I didn't understand that until kindergarten.
And you remember how it made you feel? Do you remember how you saw yourself as one of those people that could speak more than one language?
I felt really smart or intelligent because certain people who didn't know Spanish would ask me questions like, how do you say this in Spanish? How do you say that in Spanish? And knowing that I could answer those questions made me feel really smart.
You know, that's one of the reasons why your mother and I decided to teach you and your sister Spanish growing up, because we wanted you guys to feel very smart. I mean, of course, we think you girls are super smart anyway, but we know that feeling of being able to go back and forth in two different languages at least, and to be able to help people in understanding something. I'm glad to hear that. Do you have a question for me?
Have you ever felt as if you didn't want to learn Spanish?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Mostly when I was about your age. So my dad immigrated from Mexico when he was very young, about 20, 21 years old. And my mother, she was born and raised in Texas and is a fifth generation Texan. So growing up in that house, English and Spanish were always blended together. So really, I felt like growing up, I never felt that I spoke one more fluently than the other. I used both of them to get my meaning across when I was young. So like when I was 5 years old, I guess we called it Spanglish, but I would use all the words in my vocabulary to get my meaning across. And sometimes those words were in English and sometimes those words were in Spanish. But as I got older, specifically like second grade, I remember me and a lot of the other kids in the class, all the Latino kids, one by one, we were called to go do testing in the back of the school. And it was language testing. And this was a long time ago. So this is like early, early 80s. I remember that no one explained to me what the testing was about. I knew that the testing room that we were going to was held in the back of the school that was not used for regular classrooms. There was what we nowadays would call a life skills classroom, where kids who needed special education support and special instruction were able to get that. But it felt strange to be called one by one into a wing of the school that we never went into. And we were brought in front of, I remember, about three teachers, and they started quizzing me in Spanish, started asking me, can you tell me about this? Can you tell me about that? Mostly to get me to talk, tell short stories, describe things in my house. But before we went in, my friends and I, we were sitting in a straight line outside of the door, outside of the classroom, waiting for our turn to be called. And we decided that something bad was going to happen if we spoke Spanish, that we were going to get put into a class that we didn't want to get put into. We wanted to get back to our other friends in the other classroom that we came from. So we made a promise right there in the hallway to fail whatever they asked us. So each one of us went in there, and I don't know about the other kids, but I threw the match, so to speak. They'd ask me a question and I pretended I didn't understand some of the words. If I didn't understand some of the words, then I just didn't understand them, because there were some words I just did not understand. But the ones that they did ask that I did, I pretended I didn't know what they were talking about. And then I got sent back into the main classroom where I was before. I know it sounds like a weird story. It's a weird memory I have, but I remember having feelings of being scared. There were not that many Latino kids at that school. There was only one Latino teacher that I remember in that school. She was my kindergarten teacher, and I no longer saw her. And kids, if nobody explains things to them, they can make up all kinds of stuff in their head, which is what we did. We made up the worst possible scenario. And I had that feeling all the way through junior high, middle school, where you're at now.
Yeah.
Up until about maybe eighth grade, we had a chance to take a Spanish class, and they only offered like one introductory level. And I signed up for it, and I didn't get in because it got filled really fast by a bunch of kids who were not heritage speakers, meaning they had no connection, their family had no connection to the language, but they were interested in learning as much as they could. And I remember feeling jealous, like really upset, like, no, I'm supposed to have that seat. I'm supposed to be in that class. I'm supposed to have a chance to improve and work on and build on my Spanish. Ninth grade, things changed for me. I went to a high school where, even though there were very few Latinos at that school, maybe it's because there were very few Latinos, we found each other. We would just, I don't know, gravitate towards each other, find each other in the cafeteria. We became friends very quickly. There was like a sense of, I don't know, walking up to somebody and it almost like they're a distant relative. You know, we sat down and had lunch together because we ate a lot of the same foods. Our parents packed some of the same foods into our lunch boxes, and there was no weird questions about what are you eating or what is that or making fun of anything. And then we got each other's jokes. You know, we told jokes about our families and weird things our parents said and did, and we got it. We understood it like right away. That was nice, but that was only when we could see each other. Then the bell would ring and we'd go back to our classes. And then we were usually, once again, one or two of us in a class of a bunch of other non-Latinos who didn't get our Spanish jokes or didn't get, and just certain cultural things that they just didn't get, you know, didn't listen to the same music. I'm embarrassed to say now that for most of my youth, I did not want to learn. And then when I did want to learn, it wasn't readily available for me.
When did you understand that Spanish was a part of your culture?
Oof, I felt like from the beginning. I told you that my father immigrated to this country when he was a young man. So he was already grown and he was definitely rooted in his culture from Mexico, in Spanish as his dominant language. He would go on and he would learn English and he would become very fluent, but he still identified as Mexican. He still identified as a Spanish speaker. It was always present. It was all intertwined. And because I loved my dad so much, I really was very close to him. I took all of that in, meaning that I wanted that. I wanted to be like him. I wanted to speak Spanish like him. I identified myself as Mexican. I always knew that the language and the culture were intertwined. And now I look back and when I talked about embarrassment, it's also a bit of shame that I didn't take advantage in those middle grade years, the elementary and middle school years, because then he passed on. And he was my main source for instruction. Let me ask you a question. How does it feel like being one of the few people in the family that continues to speak two languages?
Well, sometimes really mixed feelings. Sometimes it could feel awkward, like when I'm sitting down with my cousins, and since they didn't grow up with much of the culture, much of the language, sometimes they would say stuff like, for example, they'd say stuff like opening a Mexican restaurant, and they'd say, oh, we'll hire the Mexicans that work at the Mexican market. They're Mexicans that want to work for us because we're making their food. Or they'll mock speaking Spanish, they'll mock Spanish, like make sounds. And it feels really awkward because I did grow up with some of the culture and I did grow up speaking the language. It just feels weird when my cousins do that. But sometimes I can feel, again, like intelligent because I can say that I'm more or less fluent in Spanish. But it could feel awkward with Spanish speakers as well. I remember in elementary that specifically like first through third grade, it would get really confusing for me to, when people ask, what I am, like, am I white? Am I Dominican? Am I Mexican? It would be really confusing to me because I didn't know the term Tejano or Chicano at the time. So I would just say that I was Mexican. And then when I said, I'm Mexican, but my parents weren't born in Mexico. Some of my grandparents were, but some of my grandparents weren't. That was very confusing. And they would say that they were more Latino than me because I wasn't second generation or first generation. And in fact, sometimes they would make fun of my Spanish because they would say, oh, well, you don't speak as good as Spanish as we do because we're second generation, because we're first generation. So it was very confusing.
Yeah, I remember having some of those same types of feelings and conversations when I was a kid. I love my parents and my dad especially, but unfortunately, he thought that culture and language especially would be traits that would just be naturally passed on to his kids without any effort on his part, like the color of hair or eyes.
Oh.
So he never explicitly would teach us things, very rarely. Outside of the food and the music, I didn't really know a lot about the culture. And the language, I would listen and pick up little bits and pieces here and there. But if I got something wrong, he never corrected me. And so I would just go on saying it wrong until some other kid would laugh at me or make fun of me because I was saying, you know, the wrong thing. Anyway, so back in college, I'm taking all these classes. I'm learning as much as I can because I feel like the more I learn about the culture, the more I learn about the language, and the more I practice it, the closer it made me feel to my dad. And he, like I told you, he passed away when I was just a kid. So I think that was the emotional reason, the emotional drive for me wanting to do that. I just completely threw myself into it to learn. And so did your mom. So did your mom. And I think that's one of the reasons why we grew close like we did. And then as we started dating and we talked about getting married and having kids, one of the things that we, before we even married, one of the things that we said that we wanted to do was, if we ever have kids, we want to raise them bilingually, biculturally, honestly, multilingually, multiculturally. Because while I was in college, I was also taking Italian classes, although I wasn't as good in Italian as I later would be in Spanish. But the whole part of it was, we wanted you and your sister to grow up feeling firmly rooted in both worlds. We wanted you to feel whole in ways that neither she nor I did growing up. That's why we enrolled you and your sister in dual language classes for as long as we could find them. And then when you guys got to an age where, because of where we lived and the options that we had, that was no longer possible, that's when we made sure to even double down more with making sure that family movie night, as much as we could remember after a full day in English, to switch the movie to Spanish, to play Spanish music, to make trips to Mexico to visit family, to constantly remind ourselves, not just you and your sister. Sometimes it may sound like we're doing it just for your benefit, but your mom and I are doing it for our benefit as well. Culture is something you practice, no matter your age. And we wanted y'all to feel rooted and whole always. And that's one of the reasons why you always hear me 5, 8, 15 times a day telling you or your sister, habla en español, whenever I hear y'all breaking into English with each other in the house. And I know you fight back when your mom and I start talking English to each other. And that's the weird part. That's one of those parental oxymorons or paradoxes. Because your mom and I became friends and dated, and we did all of that in English, that's the language that we feel most comfortable in, most intimate in, when we're just together. when we're having moments together. When we're having family moments with you all and extended family, we'll slip back into Spanish. But I got this feeling that when you and your sister grow up and go, and it's just your mom and me, we'll probably be just speaking English to each other.
You guys said it was because you guys were adults.
Yeah, we say we use that for a lot of reasons. Do you ever feel tired? Like when you come home after a whole day in English at school, and then you come home and we make you switch to Spanish? I mean, this is probably the longest English conversation you and I've had up till now.
No, not really. For me, switching languages is pretty easy. It's not tiring or hard at all. But I'm exposed to a lot of Spanish in school. I expose myself to a lot of Spanish as well. So when I get home, I'll have Spanish music playing sometimes. I'll read books that are in Spanish. Most times in school is when I'm helping somebody with their Spanish homework. When the Spanish teacher comes and talks to me, it'll always be in Spanish. Or sometimes with my friends, my Spanish-speaking friends, we'll talk in Spanish sometimes.
Does it ever feel like extra work when your mom and I come in and we turn the movie in the soundtrack and subtitles, we turn them from English to Spanish? Does it ever feel like extra work that we're making y'all do?
It really depends on the movie. For example, when you guys switched Lilo and Stitch to Spanish, I was really mad because Lilo and Stitch is way funnier in English. It's mostly movies that I've watched before and I want to watch with you guys. It's because most of those movies I've watched in English. And when you listen to them in Spanish, it's like, it's not the same. So it's like if you were to play Amadeus in Spanish, it wouldn't be the same laugh. It would be a completely different laugh. Or if you were to play what was the Italian Holocaust movie? La Vida es Bella?
La Vita è Bella.
Yeah. If you were to play that movie in English, even though you know it's better in Italian.
You know, you're right. When it comes to movies, I do like to watch the movie in the original language that it was performed. I understand that. But that also means that I like to watch movies from Latin American countries in the original Spanish as well. I enjoy hearing the actor match with their own voice. You know, it's their whole instrument brought to the screen, right? I remember when I went through this cultural reawakening in college, you know, that was very unique to me, like it happened with me, but it didn't happen so much with my brothers. They had other interests, to be honest. They had other interests, and those other interests were all taught and facilitated in English. And so English was the thing that they just continued to use as a means to get to learn more about the things they wanted to learn about. Especially after our dad died, the connection to the Mexican culture that he brought into the house was pretty much severed. And then it was all Tejano culture from my mom's side of the family. And there's a lot of Mexican culture embedded in Tejano culture, obviously. But there's also a lot of American culture as well. And they would gravitate towards the American part of it. So Tex-Mex food, as opposed to really authentic Mexican food. Or, you know, if they were going to listen to Spanish music, it would be Tejano music. They really identified with that part. And then later on in life, it was just more and more English. I don't know if they would say it now, but unconsciously, they were making choices. We all did. We make choices about what kind of music we listen to, what kind of movies we go see, what kind of jobs we choose, what kind of classes we take to study, what kind of degree plans we pursue. And we all made these choices. And in the end, you know, your uncles are very good with technical things and working with things. And they like that and they're good at it. And I prefer to work with people. And so the languages are my tools. They're the words I use, the vocabulary I use are tools in my toolbox that I use to get my work done. You know, I honestly, culturally, in my head, always identified myself as Mexican because that's what my dad said we were. But I was never born in Mexico. I was never raised in Mexico. Outside of a handful of trips with a family, I didn't really know Mexico. And it wasn't until like mid-20s that it kind of hit me like, oh man, I'm not Mexican. I'm Tejano. And that's good. That's not bad. There's nothing wrong with that. There's a lot of good things about that. And then later on, I would introduce myself as Tejano or sometimes Chicano, depending on, if I was at a protest or not. We wanted you and your sister to benefit from our personal growth because she went through the same thing. Her mother's Mexican, so she grew up thinking her whole life that she's Mexican until she learned that she wasn't. And we wanted to give you and your sister, I'm not going to say a head start, we wanted to save you all of that questioning and wondering and self-doubt period so that you grew up knowing who you are, who you are from the beginning. So like when we go to Mexico, you know that I introduce us as Tejanos and people understand that and they realize that and they get it right away and there's no confusion.
It's different when you introduce us as Tejano in the U.S. Not many people know what what Tejano means. Like when my friends will ask me or when anyone will ask me my age, where I come from, where my family's from. I say I'm Tejana, but they don't know what it means. Even Tanya, who is second generation Mexican, she doesn't know what Chicana or Tejana means. So she always identifies as Mexican.
I get that. And I don't think many people outside of the culture really use that word a lot like we do. I mean, it's funny to me because it's a word that like, hundreds of years old, but there's still a lot of people in Texas who don't understand. You could drive around the state and you could show them things and say, that's Tejano. And they were like, oh, I get that now. Oh, okay. I understand that. But they just didn't have the word for it. Language and culture are so wrapped up, for me anyways, that it's like a gift. It's a gift that I received from my parents who received it from their parents. And it's a gift that I want to send off to you and your sister. I used to feel really confused when I was younger, like in high school. And I had friends and we would talk about family backgrounds. They would say things like, oh yeah, I'm German Polish mix, or I'm French Scottish mix. And then I would ask, oh, okay. Anyone in your family still speak German? Anyone still speaks French? And they would just give me the strangest looks like, no, that was like 2-3 generations back. And I'm thinking, yeah, but why not? I felt like it was a totally reasonable question to ask. And they felt like it was the weirdest, dumbest thing to ask. Like, no, they learned English as quickly as possible. And we all grew up speaking English. My parents grew up speaking English. I speak English. Like they saw their families starting from one generation ago or two generations ago. And I'm like, yeah, but your families go back further. And not that I'm a big genealogy nut, but I mean, again, that culture gets passed through many ways. It gets passed through the foods that we cook and prepare and share with our children. It gets passed on through the music and the songs that we sing to our children. It gets passed on the dances that we show our kids, and it gets passed on through the language. It made me sad to think that somewhere up their family tree, somebody had made a choice, unconscious or not, they made a choice to not pass on that part of the culture. Let me ask you something. Do you ever feel this? This is how I used to feel when I was younger. And I'm curious to know, because I was about the same age that you are now. Another reason when I was younger, why I didn't want to speak Spanish for a period of years or didn't want to learn any more Spanish. I mean, I would speak it with my parents, speak it with my older brothers, family members, but I wasn't actively trying to learn more around your age. And the reason was because I couldn't express myself as clearly or as quickly as I could in English. I would go to school and I would take hours and hours of instruction in English. And then I would come home And trying to switch to Spanish, I didn't feel as smart because I didn't have all the words to express everything that I wanted to express. And I had those words in English. I had a bigger toolbox in English to pull from than I did in Spanish. And so then I got frustrated, not with myself, but I got frustrated with the Spanish.
Only when maybe third grade, when they moved me to English class, because when they moved me to English class, I really had no Spanish at all in the school. So when you guys would say speak Spanish, I would get angry because I lost some of my Spanish. So I couldn't communicate as well. And I wouldn't get upset at the language. I wouldn't get upset like, oh, I don't want to learn Spanish. I'd get upset at you guys because you guys were forcing me to do something. And I was so confused on why I couldn't just speak English. I didn't understand at the time why I couldn't just speak English instead of Spanish, because I was speaking English 24/7 at school, and I would even get sometimes in trouble with my friends who didn't speak Spanish. I'd get in trouble with them when I'd speak Spanish. So in my head, English was right and Spanish was wrong. I shouldn't really speak it a lot. But when you guys made me speak Spanish, that was different. I didn't understand at all, and I got angry.
Just one more thing. I'm really curious. So in the way that when I was older and trying really hard to learn as much Spanish as I could, do you feel like your Spanish or being bilingual has pushed you or driven you towards certain things, some of the music that you listen to now, or some of the movies you like to watch, or some of the clothes you like to wear? Do you feel like it's influenced a part of who you are, who you're becoming?
Absolutely. Especially now, I didn't understand that Spanish was really, really important until the fifth grade, because when I moved to my school, it was a very diverse school. There were barely any white kids. And so most people grew up bilingual. They were learning, or they had been born with two languages, or sometimes three languages. Like, I knew a kid who spoke Urdu and Arabic. So I didn't understand that Spanish was really important until fifth grade, because I saw everybody else saying that it was important. And they explained to me and they showed me how important Spanish was as a part of who I am, as a part of my culture. As I learned more about my culture, I started to dig deeper. And that's when I got interested into Mesoamerican culture before colonization. And I started learning Native American languages, Mesoamerican languages. And that's affected how I see things now. So now I can tell why Mexican Spanish might be different from Puerto Rican Spanish. Puerto Rican Spanish has some words connected to their Taino ancestry, and some words from Mexican Spanish is connected to our Mexica, or Mexico's Mexica ancestry. That affects how I choose to expose myself. So I'll listen to Spanish songs, and I'll listen to some music in Nahuatl, and then I'll try to definitely learn more about different countries. Now that I've already learned a lot about my country, I start learning more about other Latin American countries. It's really affected how I expose myself to books, to my clothes, to my music. And sometimes it's really hard to stay interested, because most of my friends aren't interested in history and culture. So it's really difficult to share interests with other people my age, because a lot of them aren't interested in learning parts of their culture or learning parts of other people's culture. So now that I get to expose myself and I get to learn about this, it's really changed the way of how I view things, the things I buy. Like when we went to Mexico and I bought that serape with the Aztec warrior, I wouldn't have bought that in the fourth grade because I wouldn't have known what it meant. I wouldn't have known what it was at all.
Yeah.
Did you ever try to get your brothers to learn more Spanish and stay connected with Spanish?
Yes. Yes. My younger brothers, absolutely. No, that was for a long time. For a long time, that was a point of contention among us. I tried to share the music with them. They would say, you know, I don't know what they're saying. I've forgotten a lot. And I kind of felt like the conversation ended with that. You know, because their answer would be, I've forgotten a lot. And then they expected the conversation to close. And I would respond with, okay, well, you can always recall, remember. It's, you know, it's just like riding a bike. You just have to get back into the practice of it. But remember what I said about how I felt when I was younger, that felt when I had to switch to Spanish, wholly Spanish, completely in Spanish and no English whatsoever, I felt dumb. I didn't have all my tools in the toolbox and I couldn't fully express myself. Well, that's what they were feeling, except that they were already grown men. And for a long time, for a very long time, we would see each other, of course, at family gatherings. But there was a time when we stopped making the effort to really connect outside of those gatherings at our mom's house or at our tia's house. So I just kind of stopped because I realized that what I was doing was no better than, I was pushing culture and language on them. And maybe if I'm being honest with myself, maybe even being a little bit hurtful with the shame and the guilt, and it was driving them away. It wasn't bringing them closer. It doesn't matter if it's your brother trying to push your own parents' culture and language onto you, or if you are out in mainstream America and someone else is pushing on a completely foreign culture and language onto you, it's still somebody pushing you to be someone that you don't want to be. And I came to realize that over time. My choices were not their choices and vice versa. So I stopped. And you know, that's why when we visit with them and with your cousins, everybody's speaking English in the house. I don't know if you realize this, your mom and I will still speak to you girls in Spanish in their houses, around their kids. We'll still speak English to the kids and we'll still speak plenty of English, but when we're speaking, we want to be intimate through language with you and your sister, we slip into Spanish. And it's not even a conscious choice. And thankfully, my brothers, your tios, their wives, the cousins, nobody takes it as disrespectful. Nobody takes this as we're excluding them. I think they can feel it. I think they can understand it. Hopefully, maybe they remember that from when we were kids, when our dad would speak to us in Spanish. And even if they didn't understand everything, hearing those sounds in the house, maybe they can see your mother and I. That's our way of showing you and your sister love.
With my cousins, it's different because, for example, Sky is trying really hard to learn Spanish right now, but her school isn't giving Spanish classes. So, well, not for her grade, her school isn't giving Spanish classes for her grade. So she's not going to get them till 8th grade, I think. And she gets really, really excited when she's able to understand someone in Spanish. So when she goes over to her friend's house, most of her friends are Latino. And when she's able to understand their parents talking to them, she feels really rewarded, like how you felt when you were talking to someone else in their language and they lit up. She felt really good. I remember she was able to understand a conversation, and it was just, I was able to understand, I'm getting better. And I feel like it's different for her than it is for Jonah, Ava, and Izzy. I'm not saying that they don't want to learn Spanish. I can see Ava and Jonah making an effort to try to learn a bit of Spanish. But Sky grew up with a lot of Mexican culture. Especially, she lives with Lila. Lila would make traditional dishes for her. Lila would play Spanish music. For Ava and Jonah, it's Ava, Jonah, and Izzy, it's different. I can see that for a lot of things in Mexican culture, they don't really understand yet because they didn't grow up with a lot of the culture around them. So I feel like it's a little difficult for them, especially because they're the Spanish speaker in the house only knows a bit of Spanish. Well, for Ava and Jonah, their dad is learning Spanish. But for Izzy, Tio Mundo doesn't know a lot of Spanish. So I feel like for her, it's difficult. If she wants to connect with the language, she can't rely on the people in her house. She has to go for online resources. Or teachers for other stuff. And Sky can learn from Lila, from Grandpa, from us.
I think you're right. I want to thank you for doing this with me.
You're welcome.
How did it feel to talk this much in English with each other?
It's weird. You normally talk in English when you're mad.
I do. I do. When I get emotional, I revert to my original language. And when you girls drive me nuts, I will switch to English very quickly. Okay, well, I'm glad we shared that with the world. Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you liked what you heard, take a minute to share this podcast with a friend or colleague. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast platform. Your ratings and reviews help us to keep the podcast lights on. We can't do this without your support. Every subscription, share, follow, download, and review makes a big difference and helps others find our show. Also, we love hearing from you. Tell us what you think of the podcast. Email us at hello@thelanguageproject.co. You can also slide into our DMs on Instagram at Talking to Grandma. Talking to Grandma is owned by the Language Preservation Project. Rebecca De Leon is our editor and producer. The artwork for Talking to Grandma was created by Nancy Guevara, and I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. See you next episode.